Hello and welcome to A History of Alexander the Great Remastered, Episode 12, Alexander vs. Darius. Round 2. This time, it's personal. In 331, Alexander left Tyre and headed east. Alexander finally felt comfortable with the idea of heading east, having captured the whole of the Mediterranean coast. In this year, Agis would die, and Pharnabazus' war would collapse. There was nothing keeping him from Darius. Going northeast, Alexander reached the Euphrates River, expecting resistance. But the Persian force, left to guard the river, fled as soon as they heard of Alexander's advance. Having crossed the river, the Macedonians carried on heading northeast. On the march, they took Persian prisoners, who revealed that Darius had gathered a large force by the river Tigris, and would prevent Alexander from crossing it. However, once Alexander reached the Tigris, he found no sign of Darius. Once he crossed the river, he allowed his men to rest. Before we continue, there are two side stories I'd like to go into. Firstly, Plutarch reports that Alexander's army began attacking itself for fun. Yes, you heard that correctly. The account which Plutarch ascribes to Eratosthenes states that on the march to the Tigris, Alexander's men divided themselves into two armies for fun. They each appointed a commander, who they named Alexander and Darius. They then threw clods of earth at each other. These weapons quickly turned into fists, which quickly turned into stones and clubs, with more and more men joining in. Once Alexander heard, he decided that the battle should be decided by single combat between the two leaders. Alexander gave his armour and weapons to the mock Alexander, and Philotas gave his armour and weapons to the mock Darius. The whole army watched the duel, seeing it as an omen for their own coming battle. The Alexander eventually won the fight, and was rewarded with 12 villages and the right to wear Persian dress. This is quite interesting, as it shows Alexander using Persian dress as a reward at this stage in the campaign, a sign of things to come. However, the point is somewhat overridden, as this is almost certainly fictitious. Plutarch himself doubts its reliability. The other anecdote is that once he made camp having crossed the Tigris, there was an almost total eclipse of the moon. Being faced with this, Alexander did the obvious thing. He made a sacrifice. Aristander said that Alexander would be successful. Interestingly, his logic was that just as the moon failed, so would Darius. The battle would also be fought within the month. I'm presuming that as the moon was involved, it meant within one lunar cycle. Having rested, Alexander once again went on the march, heading downstream along the Tigris. 4 days after crossing, his scouts reported that Persian cavalry had been sighted nearby on open ground, but they didn't know exactly how many there were. After more scouts arrived, it became clear that the force was not above 1,000. Alexander immediately attacked with a small force, with the rest of the army following at its own pace. Just as with the force guarding the Euphrates, as soon as the Persians saw Alexander, they ran for their lives. Most escaped, but a few, whose horses couldn't stand the pace, were captured. They revealed that Darius was not far away, and he had a powerful force. Alexander's army was 47,000 strong, made up of about 40,000 infantry and 7,000 cavalry. Darius had been collecting a force from across his empire, and the ancient sources state Darius's force at 1 million strong. Was Darius's army 1 million strong? In a word, no. Modern estimates put Darius's force at least 50,000, but estimates go up to and above 100,000. If we say the force was around 90,000 strong, it would be roughly 50,000 infantry, 40,000 cavalry, 1,000 to 2,000 archers, and, not forgetting, 15 war elephants. Darius's army had taken up position on the plains about 75 miles from Arbela at Gaugamela. Gaugamela translates as House of the Camel. This is because an ancient king once escaped from an enemy on a camel, and assigned the revenue from the surrounding villages to the upkeep of the camel. Already a plain, Darius was going to make sure he avoided the debacle at Issus by sending out his troops to flatten the ground. Everything was going perfect. Nothing would be left to chance. Once Alexander found out where Darius was located, he stayed where he was, about 7 miles away from Darius, for 4 days, allowing his men to rest. Alexander decided to leave the animals behind, along with those unfit for service. He then set off into the night, just in time to engage the Persians at dawn. Reports came to Darius that Alexander was on the move, and he ordered his men to battle stations. It was October 331. Battle was imminent. As Alexander approached, he couldn't see Darius, as there was a ridge of highland between the two forces. Once Alexander reached the crest and began to descend, he ordered his troops to halt and sent for his officers. They needed a plan. Should they attack or wait? Parmenio advised they wait just long enough to conduct careful reconnaissance of the ground. As far as they knew, there could be hidden traps, trenches, or stakes. They could also find out more about their enemy. After reconnaissance had been made, Alexander recalled his officers for a second meeting. He said that there was no need to encourage them, as their previous battles were inspiration enough. He just asked that every man do his best and be disciplined. For if just one person neglected their duty, the whole army would be in danger. Alexander then dismissed them and ordered the troops rest and eat. At this point, Parmenio advised that Alexander make a night attack. This makes sense. I cannot stress enough how difficult this battle was going to be. Numbers are an advantage, and Alexander was seriously outnumbered. If Alexander was going to win, it makes sense to try and swing things in his advantage. By fighting at night, his men wouldn't be able to see how outnumbered they were, and so maybe more confident. Also, he would have the element of surprise. To this, Alexander famously responded, "I will not demean myself by stealing victory like a thief." See Arrian, Book 3, Chapter 10. This may seem crazy, but it also makes sense. Alexander did not want to defeat Darius. He wanted to destroy Darius. Darius reasoned that he had been defeated at Issus due to the location of the battle, and therefore fought again. Alexander wanted to defeat Darius in conditions that favoured Darius, so he would know there was no hope of victory at all. That way, Alexander would be able to win the war, and not just the battle. Arrian, who was also a general, explains that night battles are unpredictable, and it could easily turn against him. It cannot be forgotten that if they lost, or there was only an indecisive victory, then they would be a weakened army in hostile and unfamiliar territory. Locals and prisoners alike would attack. Much safer to fight in the day. But then again, Alexander had a huge ego, and this may have been part of his complete faith in himself. After this, his friends left him alone and he went to sleep. When morning came, he had, unusually, not woken up. His officers decided to order the men to eat breakfast, and then checked on Alexander once the men had eaten, but he was still asleep. Parmenio called out to Alexander a few times, and he eventually stirred. Parmenio asked Alexander how he could sleep, as though they had already won, to which Alexander replied, smiling, "Why not? Do you not see that we have already won the battle? Now we are delivered from roving around these endless, devastated plains, and chasing this Darius, who will never stand and fight?" See Plutarch, Alexander, chapter 32. Alexander was definitely confident with his plan. Noticeably, Darius didn't let his men rest that night, as Alexander did. He kept them in battle stations, fully expecting a night attack. By being armed all through the night, fear crept up and consumed the Persians. Rather than being a fear from some sudden action which can cause an adrenaline rush and help in the heat of a battle, it was brooded upon until the Persian spirit was sapped. Darius was at the centre of his formation, just as he was at Issus. He surrounded himself with the best of his infantry and archers, with the elephants just in front of his line. He had cavalry and chariots on either wing. The left wing was commanded by a satrap called Bessus. Remember that name. Behind all of this was the majority of his infantry. Alexander had the phalanx at the centre of his army, with himself and Parmenio on either side, commanding the right wing and left wing, respectively. On either side of them were some more cavalry and light troops, with the second reserve phalanx behind. The two forces grew closer and closer, and Alexander began moving towards his right, a move which the Persians countered. But Alexander kept marching towards the right, and kept going, and kept going. He advanced all the way to the edge of the area the Persians had flattened. The Persians didn't want to move onto the rougher ground, as their chariots would be useless. So they launched an attack against the Macedonian cavalry. A close battle ensued, as the Persians fought back, but the Macedonians eventually got the upper hand. At this point, the Persians launched their scythe chariots against Alexander, but they were unsuccessful, simply struck down by Macedonian missiles, and the drivers were killed by the cavalry. If any survived this, the infantry were ordered to break ranks and let them go through, to be killed by the royal guard and army grooms. So the Persian left wasn't going well. Darius decided to launch his grand strategy. What plans did Darius have, you ask? Did he have any top-secret manoeuvres? Any hidden forces? Any courageous charge? No, no, and no. He was going to use his superior numbers to surround the Macedonians and kill them. Not the most imaginative plan, but a logical one. He sent the main body of his infantry against the Macedonian infantry, and ordered the cavalry on his left to outflank the Macedonian right. How could that possibly go wrong? Well, the Persians moved around to attack Alexander, which they must do. But this created a problem. Those troops moved to be able to outflank Alexander, but when they moved, they created a gap in the Persian line. This was what Alexander had been waiting for. He charged into that gap with his companions and heavy infantry in that sector. Just like at the Granicus, and just like at Issus, the Persian line was pinned against the Macedonian infantry, and just like at the Granicus, and just like at Issus, Alexander had outflanked the main Persian line, and was able to charge right into it, killing everything in his path. Alexander worked his way through the Persians, approaching the censor, and approaching Darius. At which point, Darius fled, and Alexander chased. Alexander had shattered the Persian left wing, but there was still the Persian right to deal with. As Alexander advanced his phalanx forward to the right early in the battle, he did something known as refusing a flank. He broke off the left of his phalanx to form a new diagonal line which would protect the left wing. As Alexander advanced with his right, Parmenio and this left wing couldn't keep up with the pace, and a gap appeared. The Persian right, unaware that their left had been destroyed, plunged into the gap. Some cavalry fought their way towards Alexander's camp, where they were killed by the back lines, but others stayed and fought the Macedonians further forward, and Parmenio began to panic. He sent messengers to Alexander, hot on the heels of Darius, to come to the rescue, which he did. Or did he? If Alexander was chasing Darius at his fastest speed, how could messengers with a delayed start possibly catch up? This leads to the question of, where was Alexander? It has been argued that he returned to mop up the situation on the Macedonian right, but I think it was a more likely scenario that Alexander was already working his way round the back of the Persian right wing. Either way, as he arrived, he was faced by some of the cavalry who were retreating from Parmenio's battle, and in the words of Arrian, "The ensuing struggle was the fiercest of the whole action, one after another. The Persian squadrons wheeled in file to the charge. Breast to breast, they hurled themselves on the enemy. Conventional cavalry tactics, manoeuvring, javelin throwing, were forgotten. It was every man for himself, struggling to break through as if in that alone lay his hope of life. Desperately, and without quarter, blows were given and received, each man fighting for mere survival without any further thought of victory or defeat." See Arrian, Book 3, Chapter 15. Dramatic. Alexander was once again victorious. He moved on to find that Parmenio and the left had fought off the Persian right. By now, the whole Persian army was in full retreat, and Alexander, once again, or for the first time, began the chase of Darius. Alexander marched until he crossed the Lycus, and then rested the men and horses, while Parmenio captured the Persian camp and its contents, including elephants. Once midnight came, Alexander pressed on to the town of Arbela, about 75 miles from the battle site. He reached the town the following day, but there was no sign of Darius. They did, however, capture Darius's treasure, and his chariot shield and bow for the second time. Arrian estimated Macedonian losses at 100, and Persian at 300,000, with even more men captured. Surely an over-exaggeration, but it doesn't hide the fact that this was a brilliant victory for Alexander. The victory came before the month was out, fulfilling the earlier omen. Plutarch, who, although he does deviate from Arrian in the telling of the story, highlighting supposed mistakes from Parmenio, got one thing right at least. After the battle ended in this way, the authority of the Persian Empire was regarded as having been completely overthrown. See Plutarch, Alexander, Chapter 34. If you've enjoyed today's episode, search for us online, thehistoryofpodcast.com, facebook.com/thehistoryofpodcast, twitter.com/thehistoryofpod, youtube.com/thehistoryofpodcast, and thehistoryofpodcast@gmail.com. I'll see you next week when we look at the consequences of Gaugamela.